Hello, everybody. Thank you for being here. Namu myoho renge kyo. I want to start off right away by really thanking you folks who are able to donate a little money towards supporting our school. As you may have seen on the threefoldlotus.com website, we have pictures of the school, the Kwun. Kwun is Chinese for sacred place of practice and learning. I don't know if you're familiar with the weather here in the South in Mississippi, but like right now we have heat advisories of over 110, 112 degrees, while it's in the 90s, mid 90s, high 90s, and the humidity very high. And so it's really unreasonable to be out in that large metal building for anyone, including myself. And then in the winter, it's insulated, but I mean, you know, the winters will drop to zero or below sometimes here. It's not for very long, maybe a month or two or three, not the 0 degrees. That's only usually for a couple of weeks, but it stays cold for 2-3 months, cold enough to make it quite uncomfortable. So all of that is to say that the donations that I've gotten from you guys over the last couple of years have allowed me to save up enough money for one mini split unit, a little HVAC unit that takes care of the upstairs in the back. And that's almost $1,000 right there. Not counting, of course, all my time and labor, because I do it myself. I can't afford to hire it out. And I'm getting older, so the work goes slower. But be that as may, now we need the big room where the big butsudan is and where there's space for students to come and practice. Also, we have fine arts shows in there, which are, as you may know, I'm a figurative artist, and my paintings are all based on mental self-awareness, mental conditions. They ask a lot of questions and that sort of thing. That unit, I'm going to need a two-zone unit just to handle that space. And so far, I'm pricing things out around $3,500 just for the unit, not counting the wiring and everything else. So it's going to be over $4,000. So this is one way that your support financially, donations, go toward establishing this school as a place, a destination for people, and also a destination for me to work, because I would like to move this whole studio out to the school where the large butsudan is, and start doing these videos from there. But it's impossible to do it with all this electrical equipment in this volatile temperature change thing, right? Not good for electronics, nor is it good for my bioelectronics. Okay, so really, really, really super appreciate those of you who are able to either do one-time or repetitive donations through Patreon, or one-time donations or occasional donations through paypalme.com/SifuSylvain. You guys are just, you're amazing. And it's not just the building, it's these electronics. If you've been watching this channel for any amount of time, you know that the video has gotten better, the sound has gotten better, the editing, I'm using a free editing suite, so I'm cutting corners wherever I can. But your help is absolutely critical to continuing this effort. So thank you. It seems so inadequate for the appreciation I feel for you guys. And now let's get back on track with more Gosho. This one is a letter entitled Persecution by Sword and Staff. I have a feeling I know what this is going to be about, but this is a letter written to Nanjo Tokumitsu. So we've been reading a lot of letters to Shijo Kingo and a couple to Nanjo, but this one is specifically obviously a teaching sort of letter to Nanjo Tokumitsu. He's the steward of Ueno Village in the Fuji district of the Suruga province. in the fourth month of 1279. So this is a couple of years after Nichiren has moved or retired to the mountain town of Minobu. Nichiren's life at Minobu was entering upon its fifth year. There you go. And Nikko was actively propagating the teaching in the Atsuhara area near Mount Fuji in Suruga. So, in the body of this letter, Nichiren Shonen explains the significance of the chapters from the Devadatta 12th through the emerging of the earth 15th, containing in the fifth volume of the Scroll of the Lotus Sutra in terms of his own enlightenment. So, thus the title, right? All right, so that gives us a little idea of the context. Let's go ahead and dive into it, all right? The greatest of all the persecutions that I have suffered were the attempted beheading at Tatsunokuchi and the attack at Tojo. None of the others were direct attempts on my life. They were exiles to Sado, and I've been reviled, denounced, ousted, falsely accused, and struck across the face, but these were all comparatively minor incidents. I, Nichiren, am the only person in Japan to be abused in both body and mind on account of the Lotus Sutra. That's not an inaccurate statement, but that's not to deny all of the followers, the practicants or followers of Nichiren's doctrines of the Lotus Sutra. They too have been persecuted and vilified and had their lands confiscated and been arrested. And they've endured a lot. But the distinction he's making here is they've all been incarcerated or vilified due to their dedication to Nichiren as the votary of the Lotus Sutra. You could say indirectly, they're also being persecuted for their following of the Lotus Sutra practice. But the intent and the attitude of their incarcerations or whatever sufferings they've had to endure at the hands of the samurai government has been simply because they pledge allegiance to Nichiren. Whereas Nichiren is being persecuted specifically for his propagation of the Lotus Sutra. Because as you must understand, the official cultural lineage of Japan was entrenched in Nembutsu, Mahavarachana Sutra, other sutras, and other schools, including the Zen and the Pure Land and the True Word. All of them relegated the Lotus Sutra to a more inferior place. So by promoting the supremacy of the Lotus Sutra and justifying that supremacy by Shakyamuni's own words, Nichiren posed an existential threat to the government, right? In modern parlance, we would say this is a matter of national security. So same thing that's happening in a very loose fashion. Look at Julian Assange. No wrongdoing whatsoever. He's just being punished and persecuted because he had the gall to expose the communications of the elite, which go against any human humanity or right thinking, right humanitarian thinking, so on and so forth. So you can imagine Nichiren proposing something far more confrontational to the government of Japan at the time. So this is what he means. He doesn't mean to discount his followers being persecuted. They too are persecuted, but for a slightly different reason, right? Justification, if you will. If anyone else has been slandered as I have, it was not because of the Lotus Sutra. So he's clarifying a bit there. One incident in particular I can never forget is how Shobo seized the fifth scroll of the Lotus Sutra and struck me across the face with it. His attack on me stemmed from the three poisons. So that's quite direct. Once in India, there was a jealous woman. Here we go with an expedient means, a story. who hated her husband so much that she smashed anything, everything in the house. Her excessive rage completely altered her appearance. Her eyes blazed like the sun and moon, and her mouth seemed to belch fire. She looked exactly like a blue or red demon. She seized the fifth scroll of the Lotus Sutra, which her husband had been reciting for some years, and trampled it savagely with both feet. Later, she died and fell into hell, all of her except for her feet. Though the wardens of hell tried to force them down by beating them with iron staves, her feet remained outside of hell as a result of the relationship, albeit a reverse one, or perverse one, that they had formed with the Lotus Sutra by trampling on it. Shobo struck me in the face with the fifth scroll of the Lotus Sutra because he hated me. Thus, he too has formed a reverse relationship with this sutra. Interesting. One incident occurred in India, the other in Japan. One was perpetrated by a woman and the other by a man. In one, a pair of feet committed the violence, and in the other, a pair of hands. One happened because of jealousy and the other because of the Lotus Sutra. However, the same fifth scroll of the sutra was involved in both instances. The woman's feet did not enter hell, so why should Shobo's hands fall into the hell of incessant suffering? The woman, however, hated only her husband and not the Lotus Sutra itself. Whereas Shobo hated both the Lotus Sutra and me, Nichiren. Therefore, his entire body will enter the hell of incessant suffering. As the sutra states, quote, when his life comes to an end, he will enter the Avicii hell. There is no mention of his hands being spared. How pitiful, how truly pitiful. Eventually, however, he will meet me again and be able to gain the fruit of Buddhahood, just as the four kings of believers, who arrogantly persecute Bodhisattva, never disparaging, were ultimately saved by him. So again, not only a story, but a reference to several stories. The example being, and as I've mentioned this before, but just as a reminder, the hell of incessant suffering is something we suffer just being in samsara. Remember the Four Noble Truths? The first one, life is suffering. This is the incessant hell of suffering, right? The only way to escape it is to cease this formation of attachment, because that's what's causing the experience of hell, suffering. The fifth scroll contains the very heart of the Lotus Sutra, for it reveals that the Dragon King's daughter attained Buddhahood in her present form. The Devadatta represents the spiritual aspect of enlightenment. And you know, Devadatta was the most foremost reciter, rememberer of all of the recitations of each sermon of Shakyamuni Buddha. So he was considered the most able scholar. Not that he was the most enlightened, but his intelligence, his mental capacity, could recite every single verse of every word of every sutra accurately. That was his skill. And that's how he became a teacher of the sermons, teaching recitation of those sermons. But his mind wasn't on enlightenment, it was on being superior. That was the great conversion in the Lotus Sutra of Devadatta actually being able to attain Buddhahood. So Devadatta was a person who would be living in learning and realization, right? The seventh and the eighth worlds. To live as a Bodhisattva, he spent some time there because he would facilitate other people's learning how to recite the sutras, but he was blocked from his own enlightenment because of his self-aggrandizement. He even tried to hurt Shakyamuni Buddha because he wanted to be the one on top. See? What I would say is a political hindrance. But in the Lotus Sutra, Devadatta finally breaks through that. And my point is that Devadatta is a great example for what we hear all the time in these stories of incorrigible disbelief. An Ichantika. This is what Devadatta was. So remember, I've told you many times, all of these people are personages. They're a snapshot of a type of mentality that we all share to some degree. So this is the story of Devadatta, and there's a whole chapter dedicated to his enlightenment in the Lotus Sutra. Devadatta represents the spiritual aspect of enlightenment, mental. And the Dragon King's daughter, the physical aspect, because she attains enlightenment in her body at that moment, even though she's not even fully human, right? The principle of attaining Buddhahood in one's present form can be found nowhere else in the Buddha's entire lifetime of teachings. This only happens in the Lotus Sutra. The great teacher Dengyo enumerated 10 outstanding points in which the Lotus Sutra surpasses all others. Oh, this is going to be good. One of them is the sutra's, quote, superiority in leading people to attaining Buddhahood in their present form. Yeah, that's a huge one, right? This is the most important doctrine of the Tendai school. And a section of the words and phrases of the Lotus Sutra is devoted to this teaching of attaining Buddhahood in one's present form. It is also a point of controversy between the True Word and Tendai schools. The Dragon King's daughter attained Buddhahood through the power of the Lotus Sutra. Bodhisattva Manjushri stated, quote, I constantly expounded the Lotus Sutra of the Wonderful Law alone, end quote. The words alone and constantly are the core of this statement. However, the treatise on the mind aspiring for enlightenment reads, only in the True Word teachings can one attain Buddhahood in one's present form, end quote, which is one to accept, quote, only or alone. The word only in the treatise must be an error in translation. The Immeasurable Meaning Sutra states, quote, in these more than 40 years, I have not yet revealed the truth. The Lotus Sutra reads, quote, the world-honored one has long expounded his doctrines and now must reveal the truth. Many treasures Buddha affirmed that only the Lotus Sutra enables one to attain Buddhahood in one's present form when he said, quote, all that you have expounded in the Lotus Sutra is the truth, Myoho Rengekyo. No matter how firmly the sutras preached before the Lotus Sutra guarantee the attainment of Buddhahood, and no matter how much the believers in these provisional doctrines may wildly insist that this is so, it is as easy to refute these assertions as it is to smash 1,000 earthen cooking dishes with a single hammer. This is what is meant by the statement, quote, the Lotus Sutra is the teaching of Shakyamuni, the refutation of the provisional doctrines. The Lotus Sutra is indeed the most profound teaching. Now, that's a big clue on the meaning of Shakyamuni, right? Because in modern times, we have groups seizing on that word as meaning evangelical, converting people in parking lots. But that's not the meaning of Shakyamuni. The true meaning of Shakyamuni is a Buddhist issue, that once a Buddhist practices Buddhism, starts to learn the teachings of Shakyamuni, that amongst all of the teachings, it is the Lotus Sutra that is the ultimate, the culminating. All the others are provisional. All the others lead you to the Lotus Sutra. Only the practice of the Lotus Sutra will provide for your immediate enlightenment in this present form. None of the other sutras do that because they're increasing capacity and leading to the Lotus Sutra. They are not the destination. You follow? And this is Shakyamuni, because there's a lot of people in the world today calling themselves Buddhists, but practicing and valuing earlier teachings as though they were the end-all be-all of Buddhism. And it simply isn't the fact. And they are actually working against their own enlightenment because of that. So Shakyamuni is trying to sever their belief in those sutras being the ultimate. Their belief needs to understand that all that learning is well and good, but it all is in service to, in preparation for, the lotus, Myohuren Geikyo. That's Shakyamuni. For others that are not Buddhist, that we're trying to assist and bring into Buddhist realization, that is our Bodhisattva mission. And that can vary. If they're completely ignorant of Buddhism, then we use shoju. We slowly, by example first, and by slowly introducing teachings and inviting to come to our butsudan, we then enable them and assist them to practice Myohuren Geikyo. But some people who are not Buddhists already have it in their minds that those people in that monastery, without even understanding what they're labeling, are resisting Buddhism, without understanding that they're looking at Burma and they're looking at Theravada or Hinayana Buddhists and seeing all kinds of problems and stuff, and they don't want any part of it. Then there's a little bit of Shakyamuni in there that you have to correct their understanding of Buddhism. That's a different problem. And then shoju, that becomes part of shoju, to slowly introduce them to the true teaching, the culminating teachings. Because all of those other teachings aren't appropriate today. In our latter age, our the age of Mapo, only Myohuren Geikyo will succeed in invoking their Buddha-ness. Okay? Ever since Jikaku, scholars of the Tendai school have interpreted the passages from these three major works, The Profound Meaning of the Lotus Sutra, Words and Phrases, and Great Concentration and Insight, in one way or another, and have given plausible explanations. Their views, however, are as useless to us now as last year's calendar or yesterday's meal. And that's exactly what I was just telling you. It's not that those teachings are bad or in and of themselves non-Buddhist. It's that they're not appropriate any longer for this day and age. To somebody who's never heard of the Lotus Sutra, I mean, those of you, if you recall back to when you first started or were first introduced to the Lotus Sutra, you'll remember, I'm sure, some moments where you thought, this is all seeming rather mystical and magical. And that's a horrible place to start your practice, because it's not. Buddhism is a very practical, pragmatic practice about the quality of this life. It's not a magic wishing stone. It's not Aladdin's lamp. It's about self-realization and sharing that path with others. And for some, I have a little Enchantika in me too. I'm very much I really love scholarship. I love school. I love research. I love finding new information. If it challenged me, I loved it all the more, because I wanted to know either how to use it or defeat it. I was always like that growing up. So Buddhism presented a challenge to me. When I first started studying the Lotus Sutra, there were a lot of concepts that were buried in wispy little phrases, and that didn't satisfy me. So for me, I had to go and research Nagarjuna, Vasubandhu, and Tendai, and all these great figures that are discussed by Nichiren. I went, okay, how'd you get that opinion? What did that scholar actually have to say? I needed to know. You may not. We all have our different paths. But for me, the more I studied, the more I found out about the perfection of wisdom and the Lankavatara and all of these other sutras, the Vimalakirti, the Surangama, and so on and so forth, the Tripitaka, the more inspired I became, because they were, those earlier teachings were unlocking the questions that I ran into in the Lotus. So this is where it became really obvious to me that what I had done is open a book of physics or calculus, and a lot of it looked logical, but a lot of it looked a little mystical, until I went back and relearned algebra, relearned other forms of mathematics. And then those concepts made perfect sense and they took hold in me, right? Same kind of thing. So this is why study is such, it's one of the three pillars of practice. We must invoke our Buddha-ness. So that's about Daimoku, using this mandala of Gohonzon to have an accurate picture in our mental, spiritual experience of Buddha-ness, right? We have to recite, copy, read, share the sermon and the Daimoku. That's a big part of our practice, right? What's another part of our practice? Our resolve that we are going to instantiate that Buddha, that it is here now. I need to be in that. How do we learn how to do that? Well, certainly chanting and using this mandala lets us experience it. But sometimes we're not sure what we're experiencing. What the heck is going on? Man, this feels great. The world, yeah, those people don't hang around me anymore. And I've made all these new friends, not through simply Buddhism, not by being a member of a group, but I am a member of the human race group. That is our Sangha. And I have these new friends I've just met from, that I've never known existed down the road a piece or whatever. Just like you and I are meeting. And we inspire one another. Wow, that's so amazing. I'm changing karma, obviously. But some part of us needs to have assurance. We're samsaric beings. Some part of us needs to know, how the heck does that work? How did I do that? I want to do it again. Or how did that happen? I don't want that to happen again. Well, the only way to uncover those mysteries, because they're specific to each one of us, is for us to study. And when we study, we get personal insights into how our mental life, our experience of the world, and our physical manifestation, how it works. And then once we understand how it works, then when we chant and go to our mandala and invoke our Buddhahood, we can set it to task. I need this to work better. Namo Myōden Geikyo. Whatever it takes, I don't understand my karmic engine, but I do understand there are aspects that I need to change, to influence, to move in a positive direction. I don't even know what the positive direction looks like, but I know that the direction it's in now ain't so positive, right? That kind of Ichinin, I will instantiate a better life condition. And it will manifest. Sometimes it will manifest in such a global, larger way that it'll take a while for you to realize how much has changed. And then when you take account of your life, oh my goodness, I don't do that anymore. I don't see that anymore. My dedication to Buddha-ness is changing my life. That's called actual proof, my friends. Let's finish this paragraph, and we'll say that's be the end of part one. Yeah, I won't be able to finish this unless I go for a four-hour video, and none of you are asking for that, so I won't challenge you any further. It's, you know, we need to take breaks because there's so much information to cover. To be, I found that I could read a paragraph and then expunge little words and statements out of it and go merrily down the road of libraries of information to satiate my desire to understand more profoundly everything that's said. There's just so many concepts here. Ultimately, it's a very simple practice, but it's amazing how samsaric we are. I know I am, that I need a certain amount of confidence. And the confidence comes from my building my own rhetoric around these things. Yeah, dragon daughter becomes Buddha. Okay, great. How? What does that mean? What are the implications? How does that function within my life? And whatever I find in researching that, more details about it, the more I discover my relationship with Buddha. And that's mine. Those are my insights. And this, you know, this whole channel is dedicated to me sharing those insights. Some of them will be very similar to yours. Some of them will sound like completely different experiences. But that's because you have your own way of inculcating your understandings, and it builds confidence that you know what you're doing. That's resolve. Okay? So let's read this one. Ever since Jikaku, scholars of the Tendai school have interpreted the passage of these three major works, right? We just talked about that. Their views, however, are as useless to us now as last year's calendar or yesterday's meal, right? They're no longer applicable to us. You should pay no attention to a person who says that in the first 500 years of the latter day of the law, there exists a way to enlightenment apart from the Daimoku of the Lotus Sutra, even if this were the Buddha's teachings. So that's what we've been talking about, right? That if someone comes up to you and go, ah, you don't need to do that Lotus Sutra thing. Just do this. This is a teaching of Buddha. This will get you there. No, it won't. It may have in the distant past, but in this time, only Myoho Renge Kyo will awaken your Buddha nature. Only. How much more so if it was the opinion of some teacher? The Devadatta chapter of the Lotus Sutra states that Devadatta was the teacher of the Thus Come One Shakyamuni in some past existence. He who was once the teacher is now the disciple, and he who is now the disciple was formerly the teacher. In pondering this chapter, I, Nichiren, have realized that it reveals the profound meaning of the Lotus Sutra through the oneness of past and present, and the inseparability of the one who teaches and the one who learns. Therefore, the merciful Thus Come One Shakyamuni became the teacher of the wicked Devadatta, and the wise Manjushri became the teacher of the ignorant daughter of the Dragon King. Certainly, I can in no way be inferior to Manjushri or to the Thus Come One Shakyamuni. The men of Japan are like Devadatta, and the women are like the Dragon King's daughter. Whether by following it or opposing it, they will attain Buddhahood through the Lotus Sutra. This is the message of the Devadatta chapter. So he's compared the entirety of the people of Japan, not because we live in a similar state now, although there are similarities, but because in Japan, the official cultural religion was Buddhism. They were teachings of Shakyamuni. They just weren't the culminating teachings. They were teachings that no longer were effective. Do you understand? They're good teachings as a forming a basis and enlightening and creating insights for the purpose of understanding Myoho Renge Kyo. Raising your confidence, your resolve in Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. But the actual practice is Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. But you know, you tell somebody that and they go, okay, fancy word, cool. But unless they start to inculcate their own intrinsic understanding of what it means to invoke Myoho Renge Kyo, they won't really get it. They'll only be parroting. And we've talked about that in previous letters, right? Next, we come to the encouraging devotion chapter. Only I, Nichiren, have read with my entire being the 20-line verse from this chapter, which the 800,000 million Nayutas of Bodhisattvas proclaimed in a single voice. That's you and I. Since the Buddha's passing, who else in the three countries of India, China, and Japan has ever read this verse as I have? No one even claims to have done so, nor do I believe that anyone has. The verse reads, quote, "There will be many ignorant people who will, attack us with swords and staves," end quote. Perhaps others have been beaten with staves, but I have never heard of any who were injured by the sword. We know that Bodhisattva never disparaging was attacked with staves, as it is written in the Lotus Sutra. Some among the group, quote, "would take sticks of wood or tiles and stones and beat and pelt him," end quote. But he was not persecuted by the sword. Tendai, Myaolo, Dengyo also escaped persecution by sword and staff, as the sutra states, quote, "swords and staves will not touch him," end quote. Nichiren have met with persecution by both sword and staff. They were going to behead him, that sword. As I mentioned before, I was attacked with a sword at Matsubara in Tojo, and later at Tatsunokuchi, where they tried to behead him. No one else has met with such persecution for the sake of the Lotus Sutra, even once, but I have met with it twice. As for being attacked with staves, I have already been struck in the face by Shobo with the fifth scroll of the Lotus Sutra. The fifth scroll was used as a staff to strike me, and it is this very scroll that carries the passage that votaries of the Lotus Sutra will be attacked with staves. What a mysterious passage of prediction. Shobo hit me before dozens of people, and though I knew it was for the sake of the Lotus Sutra, being an ordinary person, I felt miserable and ashamed. Had I had the strength, I would have wrested it from him, trampled on it and broken it, and thrown it away. However, it was in fact the fifth scroll of the Lotus Sutra. So he's about to break into another story. And I think that's a good place to pause. We'll continue this in part two, which will probably be enough to complete this Gosho. In the meantime, if you have any questions about what I just said, not only from the letter, but my own interjections, please feel free to talk about it in the comments, or email me specifically if it's something that you feel strongly about and maybe don't want to share in such a public forum. I totally understand that. tlksylvain@gmail.com. In the meantime, super proud of you, keeping your practice going. Keep it strong, stay healthy, be mindful. And in our world today, one of the hardest things to do is to just be kind. There are so many forces on us these days. Try to keep a positive attitude. The chanting certainly helps for that, doesn't it? And I will see you in the next video. Thanks for being here. Take care. Bye.